For listening, opinions are those of the speakers, not necessarily shared by others at the station, but ask them and maybe they'll agree.
Hello, folks, and welcome to the May 14th, 2011 edition of the Illinois World Labor Hour, brought to you over the air by WEFT 90.1 FM radio in Champaign, Illinois, and webcast worldwide at weft.org. The views and opinions expressed during this hour program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of WFT's management, board of directors, or Prairie Air Incorporated. Now, here's Tom to acknowledge some of our underwriters.
This hour of programming is being brought to you by you listeners of WEFT and by the Brotherhood of the Maintenance Way. The Brotherhood of the Maintenance Way employees are proud to continue their support for the Illinois World Labor Hour. A democratic union, the BMWE celebrates the voice for labor on WEFT. It is our hope that all workers may share the same benefits that they enjoy, such as living wages, job security, away-from-home expense pay, early retirement, Canadian-style health insurance, and guaranteed year-round work. And the Illinois World Labor Hour is being supported in part by you listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. I'm your host, David Johnson, here today with co-host Tom Thomas, who has some workers' interest news for us later in the show, the Labor Hour Cultural Corner. Tom's poem of the week from his book, Cries for Justice, will be Till the Pyramids Are Dust. And here with us today is also Bob Plesney, our co-host, other co-host, and technical advisor. And we're not certain if co-host Bill Gorell is going to be coming in today or not, but we'll wait and see. But anyway, now here's Tom to kick off this week's edition of Workers' Interest News.
Hey, this from the Associated Press. Accustomed to being the first to dip its toe into hot-button issues, Vermont is preparing to provide public health care to all residents, regardless of income, moving toward a government-run system that will take it as close to Canada's philosophically as it is geographically. Vermont Governor Peter Shumlin is expected to sign legislation this month that will mark the first step toward phasing out most private insurance. The ultimate goal, Governor Shumlin said, is a Canadian-style system where health care is a right and not a privilege. It is not clear yet how Vermont, the first state to ban slavery in its constitution and the first to give marriage rights to same-sex couples, will achieve universal health care. The current bill places responsibility for the details of the new system in the hands of a powerful new state board consisting of 5 members, which, in consultation with the executive branch and the legislature, will work to answer the big questions in the bill. Those include how the system will be paid for, what benefits will be covered, what co-pays and deductibles it would include, and other details. While federal law will require people to have health insurance and offer minor subsidies to help low and moderate income people buy it, Vermont will be going much further, changing the way doctors and hospitals are paid and streamlining the processing of insurance claims. And every resident of the state will be protected.
Vermont out in front again. Hey, Tom?
Absolutely.
Excellent, excellent. I got a story here from Mark Brenner, posted up on Labor Notes, talks about activists shine a light on billionaires and bankers. Sick of bankers, billionaire politicians, and corporate honchos making out like bandits, 15,000 people marched through the caverns of Wall Street yesterday. They aimed much of their fury at Mayor Michael Bloomberg. He plans brutal cuts to education and services for the poor, while millionaires will pay even less tax next year, and banks continue to rack up huge tax breaks. If Bloomberg's budget passes, teachers could see 4,100 layoffs. Meal services and housing assistance for low-income people living with HIV could be eliminated. Child care and senior centers are on the chopping block. 8 separate marches converged on Wall Street as unions and community groups rallied together to demand the city end corporate property tax exemptions and renegotiate contracts with big banks that the city pays to manage payments. Last year, corporate profits exploded, jumping 29% to $1.65 trillion. CEO salaries saw a similar bounce, and Wall Street executives raked in $21 billion in bonuses, the fifth highest payout ever. Recent reports from the GAO, the Federal Auditing Agency, show that 2 out of every 3 corporations are paying 0 federal income taxes, and most of the Fortune 500 pays a lower portion of their earnings in federal taxes than working folks. Meanwhile, corporate giants like General Electric, Bank of America, and Boeing have gotten away with paying no taxes at all. Dave?
Millions of people around the world marched on Sunday, May 1st, defending workers' rights in traditional May 1st demonstrations, in some cases clashing with police. In Europe, austerity measures amid budget cuts caused help fuel protests, anger in countries such as Greece and Portugal. More than 420,000 people rallied across Germany, which is Europe's biggest economy, is pushing for higher budget cuts among some poorer neighbors. Protests were largely peaceful in Berlin, and one of the biggest turnouts was in Istanbul, Turkey, where an estimated 200,000 people marched to demand worker rights and better wages. There were large May Day turnouts in Moscow, where May Day is an official Russian holiday, and there were fears that violence would erupt on Sunday after about 4,000 protesters clashed with police in Hamburg, leaving 10 police injured. Meanwhile, in Portugal, tens of thousands of people marched in Lisbon, with a union leader shouting, "We will never accept being colonized." Tom?
Governor Pat Quinn said the state will aggressively pursue federal aid for the southern Illinois residents affected by the recent flooding. Quinn made the pledge last Monday during a visit to the flood-ravaged areas near Metropolis, Illinois. During the visit, Quinn met with city and county officials to discuss the impact of the flooding and to make plans for recovery. Governor Quinn also said, "Thank you to the Illinois National Guard and local and state responders and volunteers. Significant help has already been given to a number of communities suffering one of the worst floods to ever hit the region. According to state officials, more than 450 National Guard troops, 1,000 state responders, and countless numbers of volunteers gave critical assistance to efforts to hold back the waters in at least 11 counties. Governor Quinn said that with flood levels still as high as they are, people should stay out of the evacuated areas until it's completely safe to return." Bob?
Out in California, the teachers out there have been having a week of protest. They're proposing against the education cuts, and they're calling it a state of emergency. On Friday, thousands, they say as many as 6,000 people, rallied on the streets of downtown Los Angeles to protest what could be billions of dollars worth of education cuts. The rally was one of five simultaneous events across the state. In Los Angeles, they had the rally at Pershing Square. They called it a state of emergency. There was 3,000 people or more rallying in San Francisco. And in Sacramento, teachers from across California rallied at the state capitol. Some estimates as many as 3,000 took part there. And that rally was designed to pressure Republicans to extend a series of temporary tax hikes, which are set to expire. The rally in Sacramento capped a week of statewide protests over education funding. About 90 teachers and students were arrested this week after they refused to leave the state capitol at closing time. As many as two dozen were arrested Thursday night in front of the Capitol building. Among those arrested was California Teachers Association President David Sanchez, who told the Associated Press he was willing to be arrested to let the public understand the seriousness, the state of emergency that California public schools are under right now. The state has a $15.4 billion deficit, and legislatures on both sides of the political spectrum have been unable to agree on a solution. Dave?
A lobbying group examined the working conditions of 100,000 workers in 83 factories in Indonesia, Sri Lanka, and the Philippines to assess how the workers who supply Western retail chains are treated. The report found that Adidas, Converse, Abercrombie & Fitch, Victoria's Secrets, and Billabong, among others, are routinely breaking every rule in the book when it comes to labor rights. A huge number of high street chains and sporting good retailers are named in the report, which lists 60 brand names as the worst violators. The report found that no factory in the three countries examined paid a living wage, and that some paid their workers below the minimum wage in the region. In Indonesia, factories had adopted measures to interfere with union activities. The number of workers on short-term contracts was as high as 85% in some factories. The study found that young women working in factories in Sri Lanka were told their employers preferred that they did not marry, and some factories carried out pregnancy tests as part of the recruitment process. This report was sponsored by the International Textile, Garment, and Leather Workers Federation Union.
A large amount of money designated for a now-canceled rail line in Florida was divided up amongst nearly two dozen projects around the country, heartening supporters. The bulk of the $2 billion is to go to the congested Washington to New York to Boston corridor, where $795 million in improvements should allow trains to run at 160 miles an hour on a stretch where they are currently limited to 135 miles an hour. Another $404 million will go toward increasing speeds to 110 miles an hour between Chicago and Detroit, and that means jobs and money for Illinoisans. Only about $300 million will immediately go toward true high-speed railroads like those in Europe and Asia. That money is so far earmarked for a 220 mile an hour link between Los Angeles and San Francisco. Including work in Illinois, the projects being funded by the diverted money range from a full train station in Ann Arbor, Michigan to elevated tracks in Washington State, and a number of other rail improvements from Rhode Island to Texas, from building platforms to laying rail to engineering studies.
Okay, the National Labor Relations Board has determined there is enough evidence to pursue charges against Sodexo for allegedly violating U.S. labor law. After an investigation, the NLRB found that charges of interrogating, spying on, firing, and/or threatening to fire workers suspected of supporting the union and illegally using campus police to force a union organizer off campus have merit and has ruled it has enough evidence to bring Sodexo to trial. The charges stem from union activity at Tulane and Loyola universities from February to May of 2010. They include charges that Sodexo spied on workers engaged in union activity, fired a pro-union Sodexo employee in retaliation for her union activity, threatened employees with termination in retaliation for their union support, used Tulane University police to expel a union organizer from campus, used Tulane University police as its agent to interrogate employees regarding their union activity, and retaliated against employees for union activity. The NLRB also found merit in charges against Tulane University, including allegations relating to illegally detaining and expelling pro-union Sodexo employees from its campus and unlawfully restricting access to the campus, illegal videotaping pro-union Sodexo employees, and spying on pro-union employees by permanently posting its police officers outside cafeteria buildings on its campus. Recently, there were some student protests, too. At Emory University in Atlanta, the students staged a seven-hour sit-in after more than 100 students rallied with Martin Luther King's nephew Isaac Ferris and State Senator Vincent Ford. They urged the president to terminate the school's multimillion-dollar contract with food service giant Sodexo, exposed for human rights abuses globally. And then Tulane University in New Orleans, 21 students took over the president's office, singing and chanting to demand that the school kick out Sodexo and protect campus workers' rights.
Wow, unbelievable. It sounds like something that goes on in the third world.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there was a series of five student occupations at five campuses back at the end of April. United Students Against Sweatshops was kind of involved with organizing it. It included Emory University in Atlanta, Tulane in New Orleans, Madison, where 70 students occupied the office of University of Wisconsin Chancellor Biddy Martin, Rutgers University in New Jersey and stuff.
Wow. Okay. All right. We're going to go to some workers' independent news, then some Jim Hightower, and we'll be back with Tom Thomas's poem of the week. So stay tuned. You're listening to WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, Illinois. This is the Illinois World Labor Hour.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. GM is making major investments in Midwestern states, Jesse Russell reports.
The U.S. auto company said it plans to invest $2 billion into 17 U.S. plants in eight states. As a result of the investment, GM says it will preserve or create 4,000 jobs. The Tuesday announcement came with few details as to which plants would be the beneficiaries of the investment. Many of the jobs will likely be offered to the 1,300 employees currently languishing in layoff limbo. The company does plan to recall all of those workers by the end of the year. Since the company left bankruptcy in 2009, thanks mostly to a controversial bailout by the Obama administration, it has preserved or created nearly 10,000 jobs. Any new positions will likely come in at the $14 per hour entry-level wage, as part of one of the major contract concessions agreed to by the United Auto Workers in order to help lift the company out of bankruptcy.
The AFL-CIO is endorsing the America Health Security Act that would move the country to a single-payer universal health care model. The AFL-CIO says health care reform last year was an historic milestone, but since health care is a human right, the nation needs a universal single-payer health care system. The United Auto Workers' effort to organize teaching assistants at NYU is kicking into a higher gear. A majority of teaching, research, and graduate assistants at NYU Poly have filed for an NLRB union election to win recognition as a UAW bargaining unit. Manash Ganesh is working as a research assistant while he completes his PhD in chemical and biological sciences. He hopes to have an election this summer to establish a union at NYU Poly.
At the end of summer, we would have an NLRB election for our union, and hopefully by the unanimous support by all our graduate students, which we all share, I think it'll result in a global success, and this will only be kind of like an example to the rest of the schools out there where they can establish better standards.
Lab safety is one of the biggest issues, and Ganesh says the teaching assistants at the university can get better, safer working conditions with the union.
We'll be having a hearing soon about whether or not Poly is agreeing to talk with us on these global issues of lab safety and also better work conditions and also paying these students who are actually employees to begin with.
In 2004, an anti-union majority of Bush-appointed NLRB board members stripped teaching assistants of their labor rights, but those rights are expected to be restored by the current National Labor Relations Board. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
Once a year for 19 years, the National Association of Letter Carriers have combined door-to-door mail service with food collection for some of the country's most vulnerable citizens. Last year, the NALC set a record, collecting 77.1 million pounds of donations. Even though they set a record last year, the letter carriers are hoping to improve on that this year, citing numbers that show 50 million families in the United States lacking sufficient access to food. On Saturday, May 14th, households interested in donating are asked to place non-perishable food items in a sturdy bag on their doorstep. There's a reason the letter carriers choose one of the first weekends in May to hold their food drive. With summer coming, many school lunch programs are suspended, leaving millions of children without ready access to nutrition.
An NBC News Wall Street Journal poll says that 69% of Americans believe that NAFTA-style free trade agreements have cost American jobs. A majority believe the deals are bad for America. Todd Tucker is research director at Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. He says the huge damage done by free trade policies to U.S. jobs and workers is undeniable fact.
Over the last decade or more, 15 years since NAFTA and the World Trade Organization went into effect, a loss of over 5 million U.S. manufacturing jobs. It's been an enormous, enormous damage during that period. Almost any way you measure it, we've seen American workers taking a real hit from these kind of policies.
So what should future U.S. trade policy do?
It should ensure that workers can organize and collectively bargain without fear that their employers are going to say, at the moment when those cards get signed, we're going to ship our jobs overseas. We need to be signing trade agreements that boost incomes on both sides so that workers in other countries can buy the products that we make.
Employees in Connecticut could soon have the right to escape so-called captive audience meetings. The legislation was born out of concerns that some employers abuse required meetings in order to intimidate workers during labor organizing drives or contract negotiations. The bill passed out of the state assembly on Thursday by a vote of 78-65, and now goes to the Senate. Opponents of the legislation say it could be bad for business in the state. And in Vermont, healthcare workers now have additional protections against assault. Governor Peter Schumlin signed into law a bill that makes it a felony to attack healthcare workers who are on the job. Offenses could carry prison terms of up to 10 years.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
If you were being hustled to buy an insurance policy, would you trust a salesman who said, "Let's go to the bar, have a couple of drinks, and talk it over"? As we say in Texas, never sign nothing by neon. Be careful then, because Representative Paul Ryan is coming at you, winking, blinking, and grinning, hoping to sell you on his Medicare privatization plan. Chair of the House Budget Committee, Ryan and all but four of his Republican colleagues voted to replace Medicare with this deal. The clincher in his sales pitch is that folks over 65, quote, would be enrolled in the same kind of health care program that we members of Congress get. Wow, you might think, Congress critters always give themselves the best, so where do I sign? Think again. Step out of the neon and check the fine print, and you'll find that Ryan's plan is nothing but a political hustle. In other words, he and his Republican cohorts are lying. Note that he says we would get the same kind of coverage that they enjoy. That's like saying that someone with an old clunker has the same kind of transportation as a rich guy driving a new Cadillac. Both have cars. Here's the scam in Ryan's scheme. While the plan that Congress gives itself and the plan it wants you to buy are both based on the government paying a share of each individual's annual insurance premium, there's a huge gap between the share the government pays for them and the share it would pay for us. Members of Congress only pay about 25% of the cost of their insurance, but Ryan's plan would require elderly Americans to shell out nearly 70% of the cost of their insurance. And very few elderly folks get a fat congressional salary to help them buy insurance. This is Jim Hightower saying, the GOP's privatization hustle would cost each of us more than twice what we now pay under Medicare. Don't buy their lies, and don't sign on to Representative Ryan's raw deal. Should a guy who raked in $2.4 million an hour last year get a tax break? I'll tell you about it today on Hightower Radio. If your job paid $50,000 a year and you stayed at it for 47 years, your total tally for a lifetime of work would be $2.4 million. Not bad, but hedge fund hustler John Paulson pulled down that much last year. Most of us would consider an annual income of $2.4 million to be a windfall. But it didn't take Paulson a full 12 months of work to pocket his windfall, or 1 month, a week, or even a day. That's how much he made an hour. Yes, Paulson could have worked one single hour in 2010 and hauled off a paycheck equal to what a typical household gets for a lifetime of work. Now, guess who gets the lower tax rate? The $50,000 a year family or the $2.4 million an hour Wall Street man? Right. Thanks to a loophole big enough to drive an armored truck through, billionaire hedge fund dealers like Paulson escape the usual 35% tax rate, instead paying, at most, 15%. That's more than wrong. It's immoral. In Washington, Wall Street-backed Congress critters are working fervently to kill Medicare and defund everything from education to environmental protection, all on the grounds that the only way to cope with a growing federal deficit is to bulldoze programs that Americans count on. But look behind that lush hedge over there, and what'll you find? The 25 biggest hedge fund dealers who took $22 billion in pay last year. If just these 25 guys were taxed at the 35% rate, Congress would have an additional $4 billion this year to use for filling the deficit hole, rather than gleefully throwing six seniors into it. This is Jim Hightower saying, since 1995, the total income of the 400 richest Americans has nearly quadrupled, yet the real tax rate they pay has been cut almost in half. America isn't broke. It's being gamed by super-rich tax dodgers.
On the streets of New York, the cabs don't stop. On the street where I live, they called the cops. Found a noose in my garage, now how about that? So tonight I'm in the bushes with a baseball bat. 'Cause I'm a one man, I'm a one man, I'm a one man revolution. I'm a one man, I'm a one man, I'm a one man revolution. The time is nigh, the day is dark, there's only one solution. I wasn't on the list. On the streets of Cape Town, shit's ready to blow. I don't know how to get there, but I'm ready to go. I'm a one man, I'm a one man, I'm a one man revolution. I'm a one man, I'm a one man, I'm a slave ships don't wait. Love many, trust few, and don't be late.
Okay, we're now at that point in the Labor Hour for the Labor Hour Cultural Corner with Tom's poem of the week, Till the Pyramids Are Dust.
Swing that hammer and push that saw. Work with fingers bloody and raw. Carry bricks with an aching back or carry heavy wood to stack. And soon enough you too will know the miseries through which we go. Since the sunrise of history, the story is no mystery. You have to either be a slave and for the boss always behave, or else be put out in the street wondering how you're going to eat. The time is now to rearrange, to stand together for a change, to end the cannibalism of the curse of capitalism, to see that every child eats and none are living in the streets. Free enterprise, they called the dream. We must pursue it as a team, till none are hungry or homeless, and each cold house with heat is blessed. We must pursue it with a lust until the pyramids are dust. Till the Pyramids Are Dust was written at the Poets Loft in Champaign, Illinois on February 22, 2009, and was brought to you live today, May 14, 2011, here on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, community radio for East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Public service announcement here. Labor's View TV on every Sunday, including this Sunday, from 4 to 5 p.m. on Urbana Public Television, Comcast Channel 6, with a host Jim Iman and yours truly. And this Sunday's show at 4 o'clock will be the first of two parts of the film 9/11, Press for the Truth. If you've never seen this film, it's a very, very well done film, mainly involving some of the widows of some of the victims of the 9/11 attacks who received the nickname the Jersey Girls. And if you've never seen a film that raises questions about September 11th attacks in the World Trade Centers, this would be highly, highly recommended. And it's no wild conspiracy theories. It's all facts and history now, actually. So tune in, and we'll have some commentary afterwards trying to tie this whole thing into currently what's going on with these wars, continued wars of occupation in Iraq and Afghanistan. So anyway, Bill Gorell is with us here in the studio. Good to see you, Bill. What's new with you?
Well, something that I came across today is a new series of little history videos, I guess, by Mike Huckabee, that Republican.
Yeah, I was going to say by Mike Huckabee.
Yes, and let me see. Well, of course, YouTube lost the post that I'm getting this from, so I could describe it more easily. But anyway, what I have queued up here is called The Reagan Revolution. Mm-hmm. And it's a 1.5-minute little cartoon that tells the kiddies about how Ronald Reagan saved us from economic malaise and hippie culture, apparently. And riots.
Oh, is this the same Ronald Reagan that crippled the United States economy in 1980?
Well, it's basically we're living with a legacy still 30 years later.
Absolutely.
But anyway, I have this thing plugged in here, and I thought it'd be real funny. And leave my mic open because there's one thing I think I need to read that would describe what's going on or something that's – something that's expressed visually that's not audio, but it's kind of funny. It's only a minute and a half long, and it's just Mike Huckabee. You know, he's supposedly a man of God, a preacher, and even though he doesn't have long hair, I think that he definitely justifies a old long haired preacher man song from the IWW. So yeah, if you want to go ahead, you got it. Pot it up there. Okay, well, I'll just hit play.
Okay.
Learn our history. Take pride in America's past.
Addison, presents. You're just in time. I'm almost done with my latest project.
Are you talking about time travel?
Correct.
Journey to a time when America suffered from a financial, international, and moral crisis.
Next stop, Washington, D.C.
The downturn in the economy is killing us.
Crisis.
People are out of work. Some of their morals are just gone.
Give me your money.
Black guy in disco t-shirt.
Stormed the U.S. Embassy and took 52 American diplomats hostage.
Oh no, it's bad. Really bad.
Really bad.
Every danger looked around every corner.
That guy's got a gun! Come on!
Somebody do something!
And learn how one man with some very big ideas set out to make a huge impact.
Why is everybody
impact.
So excited?
Because they see hope.
God had a plan for America. I see it as a shining city on a hill. If we ever forget that we are one nation under God, then we will be one nation gone under.
Go back in time to see how one man transformed a nation and the world.
Tear down this wall.
Tear down this wall.
Dun, dun.
And Time Travel Academy, The Reagan Revolution.
And I guess that's it, the Time Travel Academy. Maybe you could.
And where did you get this, Bill?
Somebody had put it on Facebook.
Uh-huh.
And they also had the origins of World War II. And
so Mike Huckabee's producing these or financing it or what?
Well, apparently that, or maybe he's just being associated with them by somebody, you know.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, man, that was just, okay, for one thing, that was true. In that one thing where they're talking about danger and crime.
Yeah.
They show a young, this is a cartoon, okay?
Yeah, right. Uh-huh.
They drew a young black man wearing a tank top that says disco.
And he's robbing him or something?
Yeah, and it's that disco morality.
Uh-huh.
You
uh-huh.
know, and it's just, it's really, I wish I could show it to you. It's hilarious. It was another thing that's funny, too, is the Ronald Reagan character they have drawn here.
Yeah.
It's like really dark-skinned.
Really?
You know, I guess Reagan must have always had a tan,
okay.
I guess. I don't know, from California.
Uh-huh.
Actually, from Eureka, Illinois, but...
Uh-huh.
But he looks sort of like this weird morph between Frankenstein and Barack Obama. Really, it's really weird, but.
Okay.
But this is at learnourhistory.com.
Well, you know, I hate to say this, but they're on the right idea about making, YouTube videos for kids. But, man, what a...
This isn't YouTube,
it's
the same idea.
Where do you...
They are actually using YouTube on their own website.
Okay.
So these things would be on YouTube also.
Okay.
If you just happen to already be there, maybe you could type them in.
I mean, this goes beyond propaganda. This enters the realm of fantasy. I mean... The way they're depicting this, history here, I mean, is just unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
And giving it to the children is doing nothing but brainwashing the children. They don't know what to believe, what's true and what's not.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just noticed up here at the top of the page, they have photographs of, these are kind of faded looking, sort of dissolved in, but they're of Franklin and Washington flanking Reagan.
Okay.
Yeah, like Ben, I mean, like, Ronald Reagan having anywhere near the intellectual capacity of either one of those two people, even before his Alzheimer's-stricken presidential administration.
You know, this is the 100th anniversary of Reagan's birth, correct? And I'm surprised we haven't seen more crap on, you know, over the airwaves and stuff.
Well, there was a few weeks ago. Yeah, I mean, on the actual, around the time of the actual
day. Uh-huh.
Oh, God, it was awful.
Okay, I don't watch much corporate television, so. Yeah.
However, I think somebody did do a pretty good critical one on one of the mainstream media.
No kidding.
One of the TV networks, but I can't remember who it was right now.
I mean, this man, I mean, you go back in his history, I mean, he was, you know, one time, you know, back in his early days, I mean, he was an actor in Hollywood. I mean, he was president of the Screen Actors Guild, and he did a lot of promo films for the U.S. Military and stuff.
Yeah, well, I've always read him referred to as an informant, too.
Yes, I was going to add that later on, you know, after the Second World War in the late 40s,
early 50s,
yes.
You know, and unlike many more liberal Hollywood stars, I can't think of their names right now, but a lot of people in the past that I remember from that, his generation of Hollywood were pretty liberal people. In fact, he was originally a New Deal Democrat himself. A lot of these people were, you know, like Jimmy Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Stewart, wasn't he a bomber B-17 pilot? I think he flew missions over Europe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ronald Reagan's service consisted of being in training films in Hollywood.
Making training films, or actually starring in them.
You know? I believe he was actually in the military, but that's what he was doing. He never did anything that, you know, would lend itself to his huge reputation as a commie fighter.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting, too. You know, there's all sorts of myths about Ronald Reagan, propaganda myths. And, you know, one of them is that supposedly he's the one that's responsible for, you know, ending the Cold War and the consequential, you know, dismantling of the Warsaw Pact, Soviet Union, and the Berlin Wall. But let's not forget, the truth of the matter is that if it hadn't been for Mikhail Gorbachev actually making overtures to the West and wanting to actually, and actually initiated the idea and actually wanted to normalize, you know, things, if you will, it never would have happened. I mean,
well, that's true. And Reagan's, the way that he was planning on doing it, well, you know, for one thing, number one, they had this, what was that, Team B or something that consisted of like Cheney and Rumsfeld and some other people, a group that was contradicting what the CIA was saying about the Soviet Union, that the Soviet Union was in imminent state of collapse almost, not, you know, definitely not doing very well at all. And then you had like Cheney and I believe Rumsfeld and some other people who became the neocons later, you know, yelling about, oh, the Soviet Union, they had these like things that were just completely fantasy based.
Well, yeah, exaggerating the threat, the military.
Yeah,
threat
it's, of the oh Soviet yeah. Union. Well, the reason to believe that they actually have this thing is because you have no evidence of it. They're the, you know, like if they didn't have it, then you know, like it's just insane.
Yeah,
you know.
The other thing is, you know, what I remember, two things most about the Reagan years was one about how he, well, actually it started a little bit in the last year or so of Jimmy Carter, but he's the one that really pushed through this whole deregulation thing.
The Jimmy Carter thing I won't forgive him for is breaking up the telephone system, because I'm tired of dealing with all these telephone companies and their different deals.
Yeah.
But I want to suggest something to people. If they want to really understand the economic effects, at least the domestic economic effects of Ronald Reagan's actions, and that is read a book by Kevin Phillips called The Politics of Rich and Poor, which actually I read probably in 90, I believe it was in 92. It came out, I think, around 1990. And apparently Kevin Phillips, who helped devise the Nixon-Southern strategy and get Nixon elected and reelected, has apparently decided to spend the rest of his life atoning for that by writing some really great books.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, Politics of Rich and Poor, just explains completely. I mean, I explain this stuff to people on jobs when I get the opportunity,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it's just like basically what he did was they lowered the taxes on the wealthy,
mm-hmm.
Collapsed the tax levels.
Mm-hmm. The graduated levels?
Yeah, right. Collapsed mm-hmm. from around 30 to 5. Mm-hmm. Brackets. The
brackets,
tax brackets.
Brackets, uh-huh.
From 30 to 5, mm-hmm. around 30. And then what they – to pay for that – and see, what happened was in the first 3 years of Reagan administration, the federal top income tax was cut from 74% to 50%.
Mm-hmm.
And it kept on going. Finally, in 1988, it was down to 28%,
mm-hmm.
which later on caused George Bush to commit political Harry Caray by raising taxes after he did his famous Read My Lips
yes.
statement.
No because new taxes.
Yeah, no new taxes. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah,
yeah, because it was just absolutely necessary.
To yeah, and
keep
also
things going.
Also, know? Reagan is the one that you know started requiring people who are on unemployment insurance to start paying taxes.
Right.
On unemployment
well, see,
insurance.
Right there, you cut taxes for the wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, create taxes for the unemployed.
Yeah.
You know, then besides that, there was a doubling of the payroll tax.
That's right.
You know,
under Reagan. Yeah.
Right there. I mean, just the name of it. It's called the payroll tax, mm-hmm. and it's also paid by independent. You know, business people, you know, it's a bane of small business people, but it's what takes care of Social Security. But they had to have that extra money so they could borrow it to cover the deficits.
Yes.
Another also, thing that Reagan destroyed was the Comprehensive Employment Training Act, CETA.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people got jobs under CETA and went to work. That's how I got my job at Channel 12 in Vermont.
You beat me to it, Tom. I was going to have you kind of elaborate on that because I know that affected you directly. You know, a couple other things about Ronald Reagan, too. I remember his campaign speeches where we're going to cut taxes, increase defense spending, and what was the third thing? There was three things that are totally, I mean, it was contradictory. And of course, We're going to cut taxes. Balance the budget and increase military spending. That's what the three were.
Yeah, yeah. And
they definitely increased military spending, and they did never balance the budget. They it went, I think, tenfold over what the budget deficit was under Jimmy Carter. And they did cut taxes, but only for the wealthy, raised them on everyone else.
Yeah, and in sneaky ways. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like an increase in the percentage of income tax paid, but it was a percentage of, you know, like I said, the payroll tax, so mm-hmm. it could be borrowed.
Yes.
You know, and charging tax on unemployment. And, you know, we have a new generation of building trades workers who always paid taxes on unemployment. So that mm-hmm. now that is the status quo. That's just the way it is.
Another thing, I remember one of Reagan's big campaign things was getting the government off the backs of the people.
Right.
Well, you know what? One of the first things
he did. The famous nine most scary words.
Uh-huh.
I'm from the government, and I'm here to help.
Oh, yeah, right. But one of the first things he did when he became president was forced all the individual states to increase their drinking age to 21. I mean, because prior to 1981, every state had their own drinking age. In other words, in Illinois, it was 19 for beer and wine, 21 for liquor. Other states,
18 in Louisiana.
Yeah, and Vermont and Wyoming were the. And basically, what he did was he threatened them by withholding federal highway funds.
Well, yeah, because a lot of it had to do with DUIs.
It don't matter. Getting the government off the backs of the people. It should be the right of the states to determine and municipalities to determine what the drinking age is, not the federal government.
Well, no, but well, no, Dave. No, I am going to argue this.
Oh, okay.
Because this is a two-edged sword.
Yeah. Okay.
You know.
Let's hear it. Okay. I'm curious.
Well, I mean, for example, Title IX educational funding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, universities don't have to take that money.
Mm-hmm.
All right, but they do.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens is some guys sports pro and they do, and the way they qualify for it is instead of actually really increasing opportunities for women
mm-hmm.
in sports, they often do it by cutting back on male sports instead. But the thing is, they do not have to take the money. You know, it's not, and that's what I'm saying, is it can be used in two different ways.
Mm-hmm.
That way, you know, I don't know. That's, to me, that's not really a, I'm not sure where on a political spectrum the drinking age comes.
Well, it's you a know. Freedom of choice issue.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, but the thing is, but the states chose on whether they wanted to take that money or whether they wanted to keep the drinking age lower or not.
Well, okay, but why? I mean, the thing is,
you know, but I mean, the thing is, Dave, it can work in ways to you that benefit you too.
How so?
Like I said, I would assume that you are somebody who would be pro female opportunity.
Yeah, but what's that?
And so I was just explaining the Title IX sports. It's the same principle.
I don't quite get the connection here.
That,
I mean,
because you give somebody a reward for doing what you want. That is, it's the same thing.
Okay.
And it would work with affirmative action and anything else. If the states don't want the if the states want the money.
I understand all that, Bill.
What I am saying is that it does things that you would support too. Let's say they have a funding agreement and it says that you have to have project labor agreements on whatever is funded with this, which means that you must accept union labor on that project.
Right.
All right, it's either take the money and do that or reject the money.
I understand all that, Bill. Okay, but for somebody campaigning on supposedly getting the government off the backs of the people, and instead what they do is they interfere with individual states' decision to have their drinking age at whatever level they want.
That is not interference, Dave.
Well, of course it is.
It's
they already had the federal highway funds, and then he used it as a way of forcing them to raise their drinking age to 21.
That's not forcing anybody.
Well,
I can understand. That's just what I'm saying. It's used for all kinds of things. And
yes.
I'm not against the principle of some. Okay, I'm sorry. You're using it. You're saying he's hypocritical.
Well,
you're not
least.
Actually. Are you actually criticizing that use of the money?
Oh,
or are you just saying that he's hypocritical?
Both.
Okay. Well, I'm not.
Okay. Because this
I will agree with you that he's hypocritical in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I will not agree with you in taking my federal income tax money. And that's being, you know, spent in whatever way. I might not agree with every way that it's spent, but it's being offered to a state through a nominally, I'll admit, democratic process to get things done in a particular way. And, you know, the drinking age is something that, you know, I'm not really sure if I do agree with the lower drinking age.
Well, this is one of the few countries in the world that even has a drinking age, number one. I mean, there's no drinking age in Europe, Latin America. I mean, the only other country that has probably a more stricter type of restriction on the age that people can drink is the Islamic countries.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, but I mean, I'm not really, you know, concerned about that. And quite frankly, with my experience with alcohol and the experience of many friends of mine.
I never thought it would be
and so on and so forth.
Topic with
you.
You
know, I'm not sure that lowering a drinking age is a good idea.
Well, it works in other countries. I mean, the thing is, this ties into what he did as far as accelerating the war on drugs. I mean, we know Nixon.
Yeah. Well, this isn't really
drugs.
What I wanted to talk about
but
the principle of the federal spending. And it's like, Dave, if I give you $10, but I say that you have to do something in order to get that $10, you're free free to give that up.
My main point here is that unlike what Ronald Reagan's campaign promises was as far as getting the government off the backs of the people, what it really amounted to was restricting the individual rights of individuals and freeing up actually corporations' ability to do whatever they want.
That was my main point. I will agree with you on that.
The got the government off the back of were the millionaires.
Yeah, I just think that you didn't use an example that I like. I will agree with the hypocrisy part, but I will not agree with the principle of going ahead and spending money, you know, when people don't agree with your terms of it.
Well, whatever. But I mean, the point I'm trying to get at is that what Reagan started was a trend that we are living, the legacy we're living under today is increasing power to corporations, both financial and political, decreasing the power, systematically eliminating the middle class, and at the same time their economic and political power.
Yeah, but there's other examples of these things, such as the spending on, cutting funds for Planned Parenthood or something else.
That
the idea, you see what the And you are right there, and where the Republicans definitely usually want to get on the end, back of the individual.
Yes, very good point, Bill.
Mm-hmm. You know, and mm-hmm. be the enforcement arm of
some kind of morality, whether it's religious or.
But you know why? Whatever. Because there's a huge part of the American people that want that, and they were the idiot blue collar. I would say huge. How do you think these people are getting, Dave? How do you think these people are getting elected?
It's not a majority.
A majority of what? It's obviously a majority of people who have voted quite often, because they elect these people. They elected Ronald Reagan twice. They elected George W. Bush twice.
No. I beg to differ. No, Bush had he stole the election. He was appointed by the Supreme Court in a 5-4 decision.
Well, then how come Barack Obama? I was wrong on that, but I'm getting upset, man, because the American people do. And that's one of the points I was going to make right there. The many, many blue-collar people, the Reagan Democrats, union members, mm-hmm. idiots, went and voted that man in. If it wasn't for their votes, he wouldn't have made it. And if it weren't for their votes, George W. Bush wouldn't have got close enough to steal the election.
Both times.
Okay, that's what I'm upset about there on that. Yeah, and they did it. You know, I was talking to a guy at work. We were talking about this tax thing.
Yeah.
And, there's something else I really want to talk about today.
Okay.
But anyway, and what I brought up was, because there's just a lot of blue-collar people that hated hippies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they voted in against themselves. But something I wanted to get into today that is somehow related to this is the concept of power.
Okay.
Compared to a lot of other things. My friend Terry on Facebook, who went to Madison, she's actually a radical middle school teacher.
Okay.
But she's not from Wisconsin. But anyway, we were talking about this, chatting about this morning. Mm-hmm. And what it is, and what she was upset kind of, or making fun of, was that there was a list of do's, demonstrator do's and don'ts. You know,
that was put up by whom?
Put up by the people organizing the
demonstrations.
Okay. Yeah, they were kind of mm-hmm. handwritten. But what the idea is that, you know, I saw right-wing media or right-wing internet stuff anyway that was describing the people there as rioters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Fox News is doing what they could to make them look bad. There was one, it's, you know, this conservative friend of mine I was arguing with over email, you know, was bringing this kind of thing up too. I think there was one incident where one of the Republican senators got caught in a crowd of people that were yelling at him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and here's my thing. If and this is the same way with the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're being called a socialist, Marxist, communist,
mm-hmm.
you know, it doesn't matter how much that you try and compromise and please these corporate capitalists.
Mm-hmm.
These people are still going to call you this. So you might as well be a socialist, you know. And it's the same thing. If they're going to call you a rioter anyway, you know, I didn't, you know, there was things they could have gone farther on. Just occupied the chambers.
Mm-hmm.
Occupied all of the people's offices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, got really rude about things. Because I don't know, what's the point? And now it's just, well, what's changed?
Yes.
They got the law passed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. What's happened with the court on that yet? Did they ever get that judge election
figured out? I don't know. I think that's
out?
Still being hashed out. I mean, look how long it took with Al Franken up in Minnesota, you know, just to get his Senate seat, you know. I mean, this is the problem is they, you know, I'm telling you, you know, it's some scary times here, folks, with corporate power.
But power, and that's what I'm going to say, is you need to take power.
And our power is our occupation, peaceful, basically peaceful occupation sit-ins
and
disrupting the system.
You want to start looking back at things, like looking back at the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
Now, look, I don't know what I'm prepared to do. But I tell you what, in the 1960s, there were a bunch of full-on scale riots.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bunch of bombings.
Yeah.
There were leftists arming themselves right and left.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I believe it was H. Rapp Brown had this to say, and I'm going to have to paraphrase it mm-hmm. to not use an offensive word.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody would listen to Martin Luther King if it wasn't for the black guy behind him with the Molotov cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something to that effect. And I think that's really true. And I think that's how come you even have people like Glenn Beck and so on and so forth bringing up Dr. King. because they want to make sure that things stay channeled in that pacifist thing, even though I don't know if that's what